You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest and scariest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent News, your trusted source for seafood prices, news, and data. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Castiglione. And if you haven't guessed already, we're playing into the Halloween theme this week by sharing some of the most chilling and horrifying threats and issues that the seafood industry is facing.
But before that, a quick thank you to our sponsor, Wisefish. For more than 30 years, Wisefish has helped seafood businesses simplify the way they work. From aquaculture and wild catch to processing and sales, Wisefish brings everything together in one integrated platform. Find out more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent.
Tariffs. U.S. President Donald Trump's tariffs have been haunting the industry since April. And for Canada, the tariff terror may only be beginning. U.S. President Donald Trump announced that he will increase tariffs on Canadian goods by 10%. Trump said the action was in response to Canada spending $75 million Canadian dollars on an advertisement that featured former U.S. President Ronald Reagan denouncing tariffs. Trump shared on Truth Social that, quote, "The sole purpose of this fraud was Canada's hope that the United States Supreme Court will come to their rescue on tariffs that they have used for years to hurt the United States. Because of their serious misrepresentation of the facts and hostile act, I'm increasing the tariff on Canada by 10% over and above what they are paying now."
And just a fun fact here, the Reagan ad was actually purchased by the province of Ontario, but the whole situation upended the months-long talks between the U.S. and Canada, with Trump blaming the ad. And the ghost of Ronald Reagan disrupting trade talks was yet another thing I did not have on my 2025 bingo card this year, Lauren. Now, important to note is that Trump had earlier raised tariff rates to as high as 50% on Canadian aluminum and copper. However, seafood so far has escaped Trump's tariffs because it has been deemed compliant with the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, which Trump signed during his first term in 2020. For now, it's unclear if this new 10% tariff will impact seafood, but definitely frightening considering Canada is the U.S.'s biggest seafood trading partner, especially for species like lobster, snow crab, and farmed Atlantic salmon. In 2024, just to give you an idea, Canada sent the U.S. nearly $4 billion worth of seafood while buying more than $1 billion worth of seafood from the U.S.
We've got links to stories with more charts and data in the show notes. In another recent news story that is bound to send chills down your spine, Wildfish, a UK charity that advocates for wild fish populations, has helped coordinate a campaign called Off the Table. The campaign has drawn support from more than 50 chefs and restaurants who have pledged to remove farmed salmon from menus as part of an international call for, quote, ethical and sustainable food choices. The aquaculture industry is not silently hiding, though. Multiple organizations have spoken out about the campaign, warning that it misrepresents aquaculture and could undermine progress on sustainability.
The spread of misinformation, the Halloween horrors persist. Tim Kennedy, president and CEO of the Canadian Aquaculture Industry Alliance, told Undercurrent that the movement and the chefs who support it are deeply misguided and their efforts will result in greater environmental and human harm. He argued that eliminating farmed salmon from restaurant menus could not only increase pressure on wild stocks, but also reduce access to an affordable protein and weaken food security amid rising food costs and geopolitical instability.
Kennedy said, quote, "Anyone proposing to remove farm-raised salmon from plates is promoting killing more wild salmon." Meanwhile, Joel Richardson, the vice president of public relations for Canadian seafood giant Cook Aquaculture, shared some interesting insight. In an email to Undercurrent, he said that it is actually Cook that's helping to build wild Atlantic salmon populations using fish health science and aquaculture technology in partnership with First Nations, academia, and others. He says, "We've been raising wild Atlantic salmon in the world's first marine conservation farm in New Brunswick for over a decade to repopulate Bay of Fundy rivers."
The Northwest Aquaculture Alliance called the campaign, and I quote, "a huge disservice to the seafood wary public." I definitely encourage you to check out the full story. I'll link in the show notes. Now, this time of year, ghosts and monsters are generally causing fear, but for those invested in California's Dungeness crab fishery, it's the whales they have to fear. U.S. state managers announced that California's commercial crab season will likely be delayed until at least January 1st, 2026, to avoid entanglements with whales and other marine life. Their traditional opening is November 15th, but that's been pushed back in recent years to avoid gear entanglements. Last year was no different, with the 2025 California Dungeness crab season not kicking off until January 5th.
The Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Association released a statement reiterating how incredibly difficult a delay is for the commercial fleet and port communities. However, the group said that given the current risk assessments process, the commercial fleet supported this outcome as the most practical path forward. So far this year, the National Marine Fisheries Service has confirmed 8 humpback whales entangled in gear off of the coast of California in 2025. Half of those entanglements are confirmed to be in commercial crab gear. An October 21st aerial survey also spotted migratory whales off the coast, so that also further informed the decision to push back the season. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife is scheduled to conduct its next assessment of the fishery in mid-December, but ultimately, crab will not be available to meet the U.S. Thanksgiving and Christmas holiday demand. Be sure to check Undercurrent News for updates.
Now, a quick shout out from our sponsor, Wisefish. Running a seafood business means dealing with a lot of moving parts. Farms, catches, production, sales, logistics, each often has its own systems and spreadsheets. Wisefish brings it all together. Purpose-built for aquaculture and seafood companies, Wisefish connects biological and financial data so you can see costs, yields, and profitability clearly. The platform tracks feed, treatments, biomass growth, mortality, labor and equipment costs, then ties it all to harvest and sales planning. Instead of spending time reconciling reports and checking for errors, your team can focus on what matters, making smart, timely decisions that drive growth. Trusted by seafood businesses worldwide, Wisefish is how the industry moves from guesswork to visibility. Learn more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent. As promised from last week, we've got some very special guests joining us. Undercurrent News Editor-in-Chief Tom Seaman and EMEA Deputy Editor Dan Gibson are back from Tokyo, Japan, where they reported from the Groundfish Forum. Now, for those that are unfamiliar with the Groundfish Forum, it's an annual event that draws around 300 participants, primarily those who are senior executives of companies substantially engaged in harvesting or processing groundfish, the active marketing of groundfish, or the distribution and sales of products made from groundfish. And it's by invite only, so super exclusive. Our invites must have gotten lost in the mail, but Tom and Dan, either you guys snuck in with fake mustaches, right? Or.
Well, to be honest, they just don't tend to check too closely at these things.
Fair enough. So Dan, tell us about some of the highlights from the event. So obviously, you're not going inside the actual event, but you're talking with the people that are in the side of the room and with these high-level executives.
Yeah, so I mean, I was covering cod and haddock primarily, as well as a little bit of hake on the side. And this was such an odd year because, of course, normally before the Groundfish Forum, literally a week or two beforehand, they have often set the quota for cod and haddock in the Barents Sea fishery. And this is the largest cod and haddock fishery in the world. But this year, of course, very different and much more somber mood around it and much more uncertainty because for the first time in 50 years, there's genuine concern that the quota, which is always set every year between Russia and Norway, is in jeopardy. And for anyone who's not been following the European side of the site since the summer, we've been covering this. But effectively, Russia's two biggest, or two of their largest fishing companies, I should say, Narebo Holding and Murmansk Seafood, have been accused of international espionage by the European Union. And they were subsequently banned from European waters, and then Norway followed suit in July. And in retaliation, I should say, obviously, this is a problem. You might wonder, well, why can't they just fish in solely in Russian waters? The problem the Russians have is that the size of the cod in their waters is much smaller than it is in Norwegian waters, because that's where the big cod tends to migrate for food as it gets older in life. So the Russians have said in retaliation, fine, if you're going to ban these companies, then we're going to reduce our minimum catch size. Narebo and Murmansk can still catch their quotas. And they're threatening to set their own raised unilateral quota for next year, which, needless to say, could be disastrous for the stock. The cod stock in the Barents Sea basically peaked back in 2021, where they actually had to increase the numbers they were catching because the cod was starting to eat itself. There were so many of them. Cannibalism was becoming a genuine issue. So they sort of lifted it through the roof to about 900,000 tons. It's possible that they overdid it, and B, the recruitment has been quite poor since then. And so every year since then, the institution which sets the quota, and the Norwegian Institute of Marine Research, have been the bearers of bad news, coming in telling people we're cutting it another 20%, another 20%. Last year, it sort of crossed a threshold whereby they could, you know, cut it by even more than 20%, because it had reached that kind of level where drastic measures need to be taken. They cut it by 25%. I don't think that advice was not followed. And so this year they've said, right, well, we're going to have to cut it another 20% then. And so obviously, if the Russians are then saying we're going to be setting our own unilateral quota, and we're actually thinking we're going to actually lift our advice for next year by another 4,000 tons, this is setting off alarm bells in Norway. So every day that passes without agreement, there is a growing fear that the unthinkable will happen, and there will not be a joint cod quota set in the Barents Sea for next year. And as a result, Norwegian cod prices right now are going absolutely mad. I mean, this morning we reported, I think it was the single biggest week-on-week price increase we've ever seen for HG cod being sold to China. And the gap is growing in value as well between Norwegian and Russian cod. Buyers in Europe are becoming more and more concerned they will not have Russian cod necessarily to fall back on because of this quota situation. And so the price of Norwegian fish is going higher and higher every passing week. I mean, frankly, we're having to find new ways to say the word record level. It's like every week is a new record, so it's no longer a headline. Last week it passed $10,000 per ton. Cost and freight to China for the first time on 1 to 2.5 kilo cod. And this week, as I say, it's already up another $500 per ton. So nobody knows where the price spike is going to end, but it's carnage in the market, frankly. So yeah, I'd say the big question then heading into next year is, of course, can buyers substitute cod for other species? And the elephant in the room here is haddock, because while the cod stock is in decline, Barents Sea haddock is actually on the up. I think for next year there's an 18% increase is advised in the haddock stock. So even though haddock is only around 60% of the size of cod, the stock that is, not the fish size, it's seen increasingly as this is the alternative to fall back on if you're a processor who needs to keep your factory running. But the problem is that in the US a couple of months ago, you announced that all Russian origin haddock will be banned from the start of next year, which means that here too, Norwegian haddock prices have also begun shooting up over the last couple of months. So that's bad news for any processors or for European buyers who already had to contend with us crazy Brits who see, you know, we see cod and haddock on the menu and we mutter under our breath something about the price and then we just pay it anyway. So they're already having to compete with us. Now they have to compete with America as well. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens with the price of haddock next year.
We just heard from Dan, who talked all about cod and haddock. Tom, spill everything that's going on with pollock that we heard from the Groundfish Forum.
Hi, Amanda. Good to be back on the pod again. So pollock, yeah, this is the Groundfish Forum is a really big event for the pollock sector. You get the US suppliers, the Russian suppliers, the European buyers all getting together, obviously seeing presentations around the supply outlook, and then lots of discussions and meetings around how things are going to shape up pricing wise for a season of the next year, 2026 in this case. And there's a lot going on in the markets at the minute. We've seen prices for PBO fillet blocks, which is the main product that the Russians and the US companies produce, along with surimi, but I'll focus more on the fillet block side for this discussion. Seeing prices tick up a bit from the main A and B season contracts this year, but there's been quite a considerable increase in the spot pricing, particularly product for deals in recent weeks going into the forum. Then you've got the very large USDA bid on the US side, which is 13,000 tons of volume from what, you know, maybe between 12 and 14, 15, 13 is the number we've kind of gone for. It depends who you speak to, of PBO fillets for the US market. And the pricing on that has been agreed for at roughly 3850 to 4-1, or just under 4-1. That's $1,000 per metric ton. If you convert it from the pound figures into dollars, that's coming out of some of B season volume for this year, but mainly A season next year, and then some of B season next year. So that's kind of setting a little idea about the price. That's a hike on B season pricing in the US market for this year. there's always a bit of a premium, the US market to the European market, which is the largest market for the PBO blocks, especially now with the US not able to take the Russian product, either single frozen or double frozen. So there's a lot of dynamics in place which suggest a rising market on the fillet blocks. I think the stage the discussions seem to be at are more talking volume for contracts for next year rather than pricing. But you know, the general talk at the forum was things are moving up. And then also on the supply side, the Russian quota has been announced. We actually reported that earlier today. So on Wednesday, when we're now talking, that was Massa, one of who was in Tokyo with Dan and I at the Groundfish Forum. He's in China now for the show in China. He spoke to Russian sources, broke the story on their quota. So the quota is up 2%, 2.4 something million metric tons. But the thing is, they don't really ever catch the full quota. They always catch about 2 million. So stable supply on Russian. And then at the Groundfish Forum, the forecast was for reduced US supply. So the forecast was for the US supply to come down about 100,000 tons to about 1.3 million metric tons. So you've got maybe slightly reduced supply on the US side. You've got firming pricing on the PBO side. But then the flip side to that is the surimi side, which is much more challenged. The Russians are producing much, much, much higher volumes of surimi. I think that's likely to force the American companies to produce more PBO blocks, fillet blocks, next A season, which could, I suppose, temper the price rises. That's certainly the way kind of the European buy side would see it, because the Russians obviously don't have any sanctions, or they're not prohibited in any way of selling into Asian markets for surimi, and that's really impacting the US sector. And you know, from speaking to sources, you know, there's meetings between everyone at the forum, and I think really the message from the Russian side to the US side was very much, we're going to be producing a lot more surimi. You would be well advised to invest to switch your production more to fillet blocks, because you really can't compete with us in the Asian markets on surimi, which is, I guess, kind of the reality of the situation. So yeah, it's a very interesting event, because you just get all of these, you know, you get Russians, Americans, European buy side all coming together. And yeah, the general feeling, I think, is definitely on the PBO side, the market's rising and the supply is tight. And that also includes the double frozen fillet blocks out of China, which are produced using Russian raw material. So obviously that can't go to the US, used to go to the US, can't now. That comes to Europe. And again, talk of rising pricing on that, because the raw material, the H&G pricing is firming for that quite dramatically. This is something we were been covering this week, speaking to contacts of mine that are in China. So yeah, I mean, it's a complex picture, all of this, but there's a lot of interesting things going on. There's also very much increased Russian consumption of pollock, both of the fillets and the H&G as well. That's very interesting, because you know, the Russians are building up that domestic market, they're building up the Asian markets for surimi. So it means that the European buyers are not so well positioned as they used to be, where the Russians were very dependent on them. So there's lots of interesting things going on in the market. I think next year will be a fascinating year for pollock, and obviously we'll get the American quota will be set. Well, not exactly sure how will the government shutdown will affect all of this. You know, hopefully the shutdown will have stopped by then. They usually set the quota. They meet in the first week of December to set the quota. So that will be another kind of milestone in the sector as to what the US quota is exactly, and whether it is in line with the Groundfish Forum of forecast of a reduction. So yeah, hell of a lot going on.
I didn't even think about what the US shutdown could do on that end, too. Jacob Reznik covering things for all sides of angles. I know he's looking into a Snap story right now, but the impact, I mean, we're still, I lost track of what day of the shutdown we're in, but there's going to be a lot of,
Well, speaking to sources that at the forum is, you know, if it continues, I mean, yeah, I mean, maybe they just, instead of having the meeting, they could just kind of go with like a precautionary advisory number. Well, I mean, the North Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting presumably will take place, but it will take place, but it's what they're using to, because obviously they're usually using the NOAA advice. From speaking to sources though at the forum, there will be enough. Basically, from my understanding, NOAA, NIMS, whatever you want to call it, has done. There's enough data there
Okay, because they stopped like
to do
September
something.
30th. Yes, okay.
Yeah,
So
so there'll be enough data before that. And obviously, you know, the scientists, you know, they're very committed to fishery sustainability. So it's not like they're going to just down tools and, you know. So I get I, my sense is that there'll be enough credible data to base a quota on. whether the government reopens or not. But I mean, let's hope it is reopened before December, because that's a lot of people not getting paid, isn't it, basically, over quite a long period of time. One thing I should cover just quickly is that the Russian companies, when they've built a lot of new vessels and new plants, the European Union is not giving them licenses for these new vessels and these new plants. So that means that the new vessels and plants can't sell to the EU, which is the major market for PBI blocks. That's why they've been building up their domestic market, because they're out of necessity. And that's going to reduce the available supply to Europe, because the Russians are producing more PBO, but less and less PBO is available for the European market, which is a major bone of contention from the Russians, because they basically say, you know, you want the fish because you're letting the old vessels we have supply, but you don't let the new vessels, which are more, you know, more environmentally friendly. And, you know, so there's an argument the Russians make that this is kind of very, is not a great thing from the EU, you know, and it's kind of a backdoor way to sanction food, I guess, which the EU doesn't want to kind of do directly. So that's reducing the fillet supply to Europe. Also, you've got Naribo, Dan mentioned previously, because they're a massive player in cod and haddock. They're also a big player in pollock, and they're also a big player in supplying pollock to Europe, or they were. So, you know, since May, then they're not able to, they could supply the European market. Europeans can't pay them. So they're obviously not in the business of giving their fish away. So they're not getting, you know, they're not supplying to the European market. And that takes maybe 10,000, 12,000 tons of fillets out of the European market. However, what I guess will happen is Naribo will be selling more to the domestic market. The companies that were previously selling more domestically will be exporting more. So it will kind of rebalance, I think. But it's another interesting work. You've got this kind of combo of companies not having these EU numbers for their vessels, so they can't sell to Europe, and then Naribo being sanctioned by the European Union, so they can't supply. So in more quirks in this you know, very dynamic, interesting sector.
Big thanks to Tom and Dan for joining us on the podcast this week. And as always, link back to the stories in the show notes. Before we go, a final word from our sponsor, Wisefish. From egg to plate, Wisefish supports seafood businesses in aquaculture, fisheries, processing, and sales with one integrated platform. Trusted by companies worldwide, including Tassel and Niels Spaer, Wisefish helps control costs, improve margins, and make smarter financial decisions. Learn more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent.